On Tech News Today, the president trolls Congress to stop patent trolls. Your car might become an iBeacon, and a new smartphone-controlled bartender is coming to save your party. All that and more coming up next.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
It's Wednesday, January 29th, 2014, and this is Tech News Today. Tech News Today is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, and other Apple products are worth at gazelle.com. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free two-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TNT1. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Mike Elgin.
I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Jason Howell.
Tech News Today explores the top tech news in 30 minutes or less. President Barack Obama last night called for patent reform in his State of the Union speech. Congress is currently haggling over the details of the Innovation Act, which is supposed to end some types of patent trolling. Joining us to explain the ugly sausage-making realities of how a patent bill becomes a law is Dustin Volz, a staff correspondent for National Journal covering tech policy. Thank you for joining us, Dustin.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So Obama made a speech about patent reform, and of course, everybody claims to not like patent trolls. What do you think the prospects are for some real patent reform to come out of this Congress?
I think the prospects are surprisingly good, believe it or not. This Congress has obviously not been able to do a lot as of late, but there's a lot of optimism within the...
While we wait for him to come back... there was a 2000 effort called the America Invents Act, and this was something that I think raised a lot of expectations, but then the reality of it was that, you know, it didn't really solve any real problems. It wasn't very effective.
What did it promise to do that it didn't deliver on?
Well, it promised to fix the patent system. That was more directed to the patent system so that you couldn't just patent any sort of vague idea. And then once you had a vague idea patented, you couldn't sue everybody for the till the end of time over some general idea. For example, a method for, you know, listening to songs with an electronic device.
That usually falls under the FRAND patents, right? Where you can't just say, oh, here's an idea that would contribute to innovation that would help mankind. We've got the patent. We don't want to do anything about it, and you can't either.
That's right. Now, just to clarify for everyone listening, oftentimes the concept of patent troll is misunderstood. It's often used to refer to anyone who litigates or is litigious around patents. But in fact, a patent troll, my definition of a patent troll, is a company that neither invented the patented technology, nor do they intend to use it in any sort of product. They simply take their ownership of a patent to make money by suing companies who may be using that type of patent. So I think we have our guest back. Dustin Volz, are you there?
I am. Yeah, sorry about that.
Okay.
I just want to pick off your comment about the 2011 America Invents Act. You're right. Congress definitely recognizes that they kind of left a lot on the table with that bill, and then more needs to be done to protect businesses, both small and large, especially the software community, from patent trolling. And things have kind of quieted since the House passed the Innovation Act in December of last year. That was passed with overwhelming bipartisan support. And now the Senate has to do something. And it's kind of not totally clear which direction they're going to go. But most lawmakers close to the efforts really like what Goodlatte's bill does. And they want to pass something that closely mirrors it.
Now, there's a misconception, I believe, that the technology companies are on one side of the argument and the patent trolls are on another side of the argument. But in fact, everybody's on both sides of the argument. There was a provision in the initial legislation that would make it easier for companies, usually smaller companies, to challenge or to deal with patent legislation without having to go through costly court battles. And this was opposed by Microsoft, IBM, and other companies. It turns out that patent trolls use the cost of litigation as a weapon against technology companies because it's an expensive, time-consuming process that nobody wants to go through. So sometimes just the threat of a lawsuit is enough to cause companies to sort of settle out of court and pay off the patent trolls. But Microsoft and IBM benefit from the expensive patent litigation because, of course, they can afford it. They have all the money in the world. So can you sort of characterize what the role is of companies like Microsoft and IBM in sort of kind of opposing some things that sound to me like progress in the world of patent reform?
Right. Companies like Microsoft, IBM, and Apple, you know, unsurprisingly carry a lot of outsized influence in D.C. And with the House bill leading up to its vote, they kind of waged an all-out, all-or-nothing war on this. There's a part of the bill called that would have expanded something known as covered business review method. They really opposed it. And they, you know, we'll support your bill entirely if you get this out of the bill. But if you're going to keep it in there, we're going to, you know, lobby pretty much as hard as we can against it. So under the pressure, the House, they killed that part of the bill. But there's it still stands of being adopted in the Senate. The reason these companies don't like that is because what it would do is would allow the Patent and Trademark Office to kind of dismiss patents they kind of deem as, you know, bogus or rubbish patents, these patents that are kind of low quality. And we typically see this in the software community where there's a lot of patents on, you know, every small type of design thing that you can imagine. These companies, you know, especially someone like Apple that's got a lot of software out there, they want they don't want people to be able to bring this against them. They want to be able to patent their software and make money off of it. Smaller developers who you know are more of the startup variety, they think, you know, we need to have an open system where our stuff is in our creative works are not going to be threatened by patent litigation, that these big companies aren't going to come at us and say, oh, what you're developing is really similar to what we've already developed, and they're going to get some money from them. So that's kind of the breakdown. It's not always a big guy small guy breakdown. It's kind of a matter of where these companies are making their money. And IBM and some of these other large companies, they can actually make a good amount of money by enforcing patent litigation with these demand letters.
Well, that clarifies a lot, and it's very informative. I thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much. Good to be here. Have a good one.
Thank you. Dustin Volz is a staff correspondent for the National Journal covering tech policy, and you can find him online on Twitter by searching for his name. Well, speaking of Silicon Valley companies and the government, Google is having its own experience with a government.
Correct. Google's three-year antitrust probe that was brought on by European regulators may finally be over soon. The company had been accused of favoring its own products and its search results over its competitors' products. Competitors weren't real happy about that. Now, Reuters sources say that Google offered big concessions to the European Commission to settle once and for all. Previously, the commission threatened Google with handing over 10% of its revenue from 2012, which could have amounted to about $5 billion.
With us to talk about Google's troubles in Europe is Marianne Russin, who is a technology reporter for the International Business Times in the UK. She's Skyping in from London. Marianne, welcome.
Hi there.
So I understand that the maximum penalty out of all of this, the worst case scenario for Google, is that they'll be fined somewhere around $5 billion. It's a little steep, isn't it?
It's quite a lot of money for them. So I would imagine that they would be quite keen to avoid that. You know, the key thing about this is that they'd been making proposals all through last year. And it was only until about September that the commission said, okay, this proposal might have something that we can work with. So we are willing to put this back on the table, but we still need you to make many, many, many more concessions. And in January, just about a couple of weeks ago, basically, Joaquin Almunia, who's the vice president of the European Commission, was basically saying in Brussels, Google, can you hurry up? We really, really want to be done with this. It's been going on for 3 years now. So you're either going to have to pay the fine or you really, really need to make those concessions.
Some people in the U.S. might think this sounds kind of familiar. There was a similar issue with the FTC in the U.S. that ended last year with little more than a reprimand towards Google. Companies like Yelp had said, hey, Google's burying our results. Why is it so much more serious in the EU?
I think that the EU takes these issues very seriously. They take the way that they regulate all of their member states very, very seriously, often more seriously than the governments of some of these individual member states. For example, not talking about technology, there are quite a few issues that involve human rights, that go through the UK court, but then when they come to the European Court of Justice, suddenly it's then enforced. But they've always had quite a big stance on, fairness, particularly protecting European countries. Google's already gotten into trouble just in the UK with our government because it said that it was only engaging in advertising sales, and these were only happening in Ireland, which is the place that a lot of tech companies say because their tax rates are a bit lower. But obviously, in the UK, it technically meant they were avoiding paying that tax. So they've basically had to put aside about £24 million now after the MPs complained last year to pay that corporation tax.
That's fascinating. Normally I don't like to really cover antitrust type stories because it's kind of an abstraction to everyday users. But in this case, I think it brings up a really interesting point about the sort of catch-22 of the search engine racket, if you will. Essentially, Google is providing search links to everything, including its own company, its own services, its own products, its own websites, as well as the competitors, the companies that Google competes with. And this is the core issue that the EU is dealing with. Now, the question they're grappling with, is a website unpopular because Google is not ranking it well in the search engine? Or is Google not ranking it highly in the search engine because it's unpopular? How does a brand new company with no traffic, no mind share, rise on Google's search engine and compete against Google when they're not important enough to rise up? And how can they ever become a big company, a well-known company, if they don't rank in the search engine? Do you think the courts is or the EU Commission is the right place for these kinds of issues to be decided?
I feel that the European Commission, perhaps in my sort of view, I'm a little bit more in the view of, I feel that the UK government does not always do enough. In my opinion, these things do sometimes need to be taken to an EU state level to protect countries in the European Union. If you're going to talk about how companies can rank better on Google, well, Google would say, well, you need to have unique content. You need to be providing a product. You need to make sure you don't break any of our rules. And they've recently started downranking certain companies for not paying attention to those rules. And then, I suppose my own advice would be try not to advertise something that Google advertises. But in general, Google says if you play fair, your SEO is done properly, you are not breaking any of our rules, then we will rank you by importance and how closely what you're offering and how closely your website is optimized to what people are searching for. But on an issue whereby it affects the whole EU, there are 125 companies that complained to the European Commission about this issue, and they've been investigating for 3 years. I feel that this is something that has to be done at the EU level rather than going through each different member state.
Well, it's all very fascinating. I thank you so much for joining us. I know it's a little late in the evening there, so I really appreciate it. Thank you.
No problem.
You can find Marianne Russin on the International Business Times UK and also Twitter at Concertina226. In a minute, I'm going to tell you about how your car may become an iBeacon. But first, I want to tell you about Gazelle, one of our sponsors today. Gazelle is going to solve many of your problems. I know you've got gadgets lying around. You've been buying gadgets for years and years, and the old ones tend to end up in a drawer or a box or just sitting in a pile somewhere. I know that's the case for me. But those are worth money. They're worth, in some cases, a lot of money, and in the future, they will be worth less money. Gazelle's going to solve that problem for you. They will buy your used device, your used iPhone, your used iPad, your used smartphone, and they'll give you real cash for it. It's an awesome service that's good for the environment, and it's good for the clutter around the house. and it puts some money in your pocket. Just go to gazelle.com. That's G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. Enter your item. Tell them what the condition is, and they'll tell you the price. That price is locked in for 30 days, so you can dither and delay. And if you're a procrastinator like me, hey, we're the leaders of tomorrow. And you can send it in later. They're still on that price no matter what. You'll get paid fast by check, PayPal, or if you use the Amazon gift card option, they'll give you 5% more money for your device. So that's probably the best option for most of us. Offers are good for 30 days. Gazelle will even wipe your data. So if you forget to take off your personal information off the device when you send it in, they'll take care of it for you, completely wipe it clean so that your data is protected. They have more than 700,000 customers to whom they've paid more than $100 million. Most items qualify for a free box, so it's super, super easy to do. What's your phone worth? Take a minute and go to gazelle.com to find out. Do it now because, as I said, your phone is losing value the longer you wait. And we thank Gazelle for their sponsorship of TNT. Suddenly, cars are becoming iBeacons. A cool $100 gadget called the Automatic Smart Driving Assistant is turning them into these beacons. You can buy it on the Apple online store and other places, and it works with both iPhones and Android phones, as does Apple's iBeacon. Once you plug it into a car's data port, you can use the smartphone app to monitor your car performance through Bluetooth. It also remembers where you park the car. I need that one. And performs other small jobs. iBeacon, of course, is Apple's new wireless location system. The automatic iBeacon update, which is a recent one, turns existing automatic gadgets into and turns your whole car, really, into iBeacons. With us to explain the promise of this idea is Automatic's Chief Product Officer, Lyuba Milkovich. Thank you for joining us, Lyuba.
Hi. So, last night we announced that we pushed a firmware update to all of our users, basically enabling iBeacon's technology on Automatic. Basically, this is something that we can do because we built our own hardware that connects with the app on our phone, on your phone. And iBeacons is a really interesting technology. I think so far it's been used mostly for retail offers, for in-store promotions and discounts. For example, you walk into an Apple store, and if you have the Apple Store app, you'll get a notification that you're in that store and that maybe there's a deal or something like that. But what's really interesting is that iBeacons is a way to, we see it as a way to securely encrypt and transmit information about you at various service encounters you have with your car. So, for example, if you were to drive up to a iBeacons-enabled parking gate and basically had an account with Automatic in the future, this little device, when it's plugged into your car, would be able to unlock the gate, automatically pay for your parking, and then let you go just freely on your way. So we see it as a way to basically turn your car into a smart device that can basically enable all kinds of services like that, not just for parking, but for individual parking meters, tolls, bridges, gas stations, mechanic shops, anything you can imagine, really. We see there is an enormous opportunity here to use iBeacons to basically allow you to make your way through your life in your car a little bit more conveniently.
It's fascinating. For anybody who's not familiar with Automatic, obviously you're focusing now on making the car, the sort of moving iBeacon target that can do all sorts of things. In a perfect world, where would Automatic go next?
So we started Automatic very broadly when you think about what Automatic does. I mean, you mentioned some of the things. It's kind of like a fitness tracker for your car where it helps you change your habits to drive much more efficiently, so much so that you can save hundreds of dollars a year just by driving a little bit more efficiently, which is interesting. Parking reminders. We also have a feature called Crash Alert, which detects a collision, notifies emergency services, and a human agent will actually stay on the line with you until help arrives. And this is all for free once you purchase the $100, Automatic device. And so from there, we really do take to heart this notion of a smart driving assistant. How can we help users, drivers, day-to-day in the experience of owning a car and driving a car? And there's so many such experiences. There's, the mechanic shop experience. There's traffic. There's parking, commuting, all sorts of moments that kind of suck right now. And our main focus right now is how can we solve those biggest problems with internet connectivity in the car that doesn't cost you, an arm and a leg every month. In a car, by the way, that can be as old as like 18 years old. This works for all cars going back to 1996.
Wow, that's awesome. There's a couple of features that I want personally. One of them is I want to know, I want the iBeacon to be able to tell not only who's in the car by checking their phones, but also who's in the front seat, who's in the back seat. That'd be kind of cool. And I think iBeacon could theoretically do that. The other one is transactions, to initiate financial transactions. People who have been following the iBeacon story know that the iBeacon technology enables any sort of device to be both a beacon and a receiver of iBeacon communication. So do you think those are the kinds of features that you're going to be looking at, you know, detect who's in the car, detect where they're sitting in the car, and also to do transactions?
Yeah, the who's driving problem is a really interesting one, and you can definitely use Bluetooth / iBeacons to solve that. That's something we're looking into. The transaction stuff is especially interesting. I mean, people have been poking Apple to introduce NFC, when what they really have been hoping for is a way to do, you know, wireless secure transactions. And that's where we see the real opportunity of iBeacons as an economic platform for the car, where all you need to do to securely identify yourself to a parking garage, to a mechanic, to any sort of service encounter like that, is to have your automatic app that basically says, hey, do you want to pay for parking, you know, with this credit card you have linked to your automatic account? Yes, I would. And then from then on, it's just taken care of.
That's really fascinating. I thank you so much for joining us and explaining the new iBeacon feature of Automatic. Thanks again.
Thank you.
You can find Liuba at automatic.com, and we thank him for joining us today. Google is apologizing today. What are they apologizing for?
Well, they're apologizing to anybody who may use Gmail, and there are a lot of us. If you are a Gmail user, Google wants you to go check your spam folder because there might be something that's not supposed to be in there. The company included this information in an apology notice about a glitch that occurred last week. The company says it's now definitely, positively, for sure fixed. But here's what happened. An error on January 15th and then January 22nd not only deleted some messages entirely, but then routed others into spam folders. In some cases, normal deleting and spam filtering were applied to the wrong incoming messages. Google hasn't said how many users were affected, but you certainly don't want to miss your big payout from that Nigerian prince.
Mm-hmm. I heard from them this morning. I got the notification on my iPad.
I did
iPad.
Not.
Really?
But I looked anyway.
Yeah. So this sounds like it's not affecting lots and lots of users, but it's kind of scary, and it brings to mind the need to always be checking your spam folder anyway. I forget about it. I don't think I've checked it until this morning for a year. And you look in there, and I actually had a false positive in there. I'm like, wow, that shouldn't have gone in there.
Every so often, if somebody says, confirm your address, we'll send you a notification. Sometimes that goes into the spam folder, and I might find something else. But in general, I'm pretty confident that Gmail isn't burying, I don't know, I can't even think of any email that's super important, but I don't know, some sort of correspondence that really matters to me in my spam folder, but it's not 100% foolproof.
That's right. And also make sure you check your Facebook it's called the other folder, because they put anything that from somebody who hasn't emailed you on Facebook before into that folder. So that's something to check for. Also, I'd like to point out that Google confirmed to us this morning that the glitch did in fact occur, and that it was a result of a bug in a software update. Not especially reassuring, but it's good that they're being somewhat transparent about this and apologizing for it.
You know, and Gmail went down for a brief period, 3 days ago or so. Mm-hmm. And it's like, when that happens, you're reminded that email, as much as people want to complain about it, is almost like electricity. It's like, all of a sudden, if you don't have it, it's, oh, what do? I guess I have to go home. I can't work. I can't talk to anybody. It's very much this ubiquitous part of life. And you don't want to worry that something's going to happen to make it not work in the background the way that you want it to.
Cloud computing is great until it rains. And then it's problematic.
And then We talk
a lot about NSA snooping, Chinese industrial espionage, and Google tracking for the purpose of serving up relevant ads. But another issue is the casual harvesting of personal data by just about everyone, it seems, these days. Free flashlight mobile apps collect location data, that sort of thing. Now, the Register reporter, Richard Chirgwin, was shopping on IKEA's online store using their kitchen planning tool, which I'd never heard of. And suddenly, the tool was flagged by Google's Chrome browser. It informed him that IKEA's app can, quote, access all data on your computer and the websites you visit, unquote. Firefox didn't even display the notice. It's unclear whether it's really accessing all data on your computer. I doubt that IKEA wants all data on your computer.
It's probably something that was very badly worded by the developer who submitted this to...
Yes.
That said, in no possible alternative universe or this one should IKEA need that. I mean, let's just say the company was like, let's see what we can get away with. What would IKEA possibly do with that information?
It's astonishing. But the bigger issue is that companies need to be aware that their customers are freaked out by this kind of thing. And they, you know, if they're not harvesting all the information on their computer, they shouldn't say that they are. They shouldn't claim that they are. And they should change it. And my theory is that they had that plug-in assembled by customers. I think that's where that came from. An amateur job. Every time. IKEA.
Just want to see if we were paying attention, and we are.
That's right. Well, in a minute, Sarah's going to tell you about, finally, there's a good use for your smartphone.
Oh, not a moment too soon.
But
I don't know what to do with that thing.
Before she tells us about that, I'm going to tell you about Squarespace, my favorite site for building websites. I've been using it for a long time, and I love it, and I'll tell you why. It does a million things. It never goes down. It has all these features. It's easy to use. Their tech support is awesome. The reason I love it the most, personally, is that their designs are so beautiful. You can go online and search for, you know, website templates, blog design. You can go to professional designers. I've done it. I've spent huge amounts of time going out there looking for some way for somebody like me who couldn't design his way out of a paper bag to design a beautiful website. And I'm telling you, there are few and far between. It's hard to find a way to build beautiful websites unless you go to squarespace.com. They have incredible designs. Then you can choose from any number of designs. They have more than 20 new templates for you to start with and all the style options you need to customize them and create your own unique design based on their original template. I mean, these are beautiful. You can go to Design Magazine, and this is kind of sometimes how these sites look online. If you go to design sites and so on, this is highfalutin design right here. And I really love these designs. They have a wide variety, colors, a lot of white space. They're really in tune with what's happening right now with designs. They have a support team that works 24/7. I've used their support before, and they get back to you right away. A real human being solves your problems. It's really quite impressive. More importantly, they're mobile ready. That means that you can monitor your site. If you have a blog, you can monitor the comments and so on from a mobile device. And they're also mobile ready in the sense that they have a metric app. So you can check site stats like page views, unique visitors, social media followers, and stuff like that from a mobile device. And when you build a site with Squarespace, you know, you're looking at it on your browser. But if anybody looks at it on their phone or tablet or any kind of mobile device, it's going to look fantastic. It completely redesigns it with the same general design theme, but designed specifically to look really awesome on a mobile device. And that's very, very important because we live in a mobile world these days. Start a free 2-week trial with no credit card required and start building your Squarespace website today. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code TNT1 to get 10% off and show your support for Tech News Today. And we thank Squarespace for their support of this show. And remember that Squarespace is everything you need to create an exceptional website. So finally, I'm going to get something valuable out of my smartphone.
Yeah. So if you don't know the term mixology, it's an art form. A lot of people don't have time to master it. It's making fancy drinks, but don't worry, help is on the way. The company that makes Absolut Vodka and Chivas Whiskey is developing a smartphone-controlled cocktail mixer. It's called the Gutenberg Project because the computer-controlled booze dispensers are shaped like books. Get it? It's like it's a library. To make a drink, you simply choose the mixed drink of your choice from the Gutenberg app. It guides you through the ingredients and the garnishes that you'll need. When the containers run low, they'll prompt you to reorder them through the app for home delivery. Getting hammered, never been easier.
I gotta get this.
Or fancier.
Yeah, this is really cool.
It's like when your printer's like, hey, you need more ink. But
that's
it's just way cooler.
That's right. I don't even drink that much, but I want this because it's just...
Well, I drink a lot.
Okay, well, there's markets in everything, especially things that make drink
for everybody.
It's awesome. Well, that's our show for today. You should know that Twit has a new breaking news feed on Twitter. We launched it this morning. Go to twitter.com/twit_breaking and follow us there for breaking news throughout the day. Also, send your news tips to our email address at tnt@twit.tv or call 260-TNT-SHOW and leave a message. Also, upvote the stories you'd like to see us cover on our subreddit at technewstoday.reddit.com and visit our Tech News Today Google Plus community. If you haven't done so already, subscribe to Tech News Today at twit.tv/TNT. Thank you so much for joining us. Your smartphone-controlled bartender is on its way, and we'll see you tomorrow.
and we expect an invitation.